It is Saturday, December 27th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and the 2008 Technology of the Year, Year in Review Wrap-Up.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
My name is Lyle Troxel. Welcome to Geek Speak. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And Miles Elam. Miles is a student and programmer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Before we start the geek news, we got a question from Dr. Don Motika. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. I was just wondering what the geeks thought of this virtual reality exercise programs or systems that were out there. I had a 15-year-old couch potato whose father was looking for solutions. I thought you might have something to suggest.
And like the PlayStation Wii?
Yes, exactly.
Well, the Wii.
Wait, Nintendo Wii.
Sorry, Nintendo Wii. Oh, yes. Well, what do you think, geeks? The Wii being a workout substitute.
Well, there's the Wii Fit, and the reason that the creator of that game made it in the first place was because he wanted to exercise more.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone eating their own dog food, that's always got to, you know, speak volumes.
I think if you're committed, did he do that?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I meant, no, never mind.
Eat his own dog food?
I meant literally, I was joking. Okay, so has it worked for him? Well, okay, so first off, the Wii is a game console system that connects up to a television and allows you to play computer games. And the thing that's a little different about it is it's got a motion sensor wand, kind of like a remote control that knows about your movements. And you can also get what's called a nunchuck, which is a second remote control management device that goes in your second hand with a small cable between them. You can even get wireless ones. And with that, playing tennis, for example, is what I've played. You know, your hand movement, you can do a full swing, and it understands that idea. At the same time, it's not a complete replication of the physics that we live in, so it's minimalistic and it's simplified.
Yeah, on a cheaper level than getting a whole new Wii system and like Dance Dance Revolution. It's a classic, and people were talking about losing weight using it.
I'd even say Dance Dance Revolution is better in the sense that you have to move your legs. The Wii, you don't technically have to move your legs. You know, it's not going to know if you moved or not. It's really just the hand movements.
Right.
So, Don, are you familiar with Dance Dance Revolution? Have you ever played it?
No.
So Dance Dance Revolution is a pad with, I think, 9 sensor points on it. Maybe it's only 4.
I think it's actually about...
It's 9.
9 That's sensor
nine.
Points,
okay.
Yeah. And the idea is that as music's playing along, there's a representation of the beats of the music with squares being lit up, certain colors. And the pad you stand on has certain colors. So you move your feet to the music, and it ends up that you start dancing. And, you know, when you're dancing, and we've seen people do it pretty minimalistically, but most of the time people are using their hands and arms as well. And
well,
it's tiring.
For balance.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, you're moving and trying to step to the beat and put your foot in the right place at the right time. So yeah,
it's kind of the predecessor to Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing.
Idea, but it's dancing.
Only
it's
more, only more active. Yeah.
It's way more active.
Okay, so Don, your client, this kid, how old is this kid?
15.
He's 15. See, I think just getting him a Wii is going to be a good thing. But the problem is he's going to get the Wii and he's going to have a lot of other games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a few months ago, we hit that computer gamers are actually not as unfit as we would think. And the most recent, the people that actually compete professionally for computer gamers, these are very fit people. So there's not...
Well, skinny anyway.
Yeah.
Skinny is not the same as fit.
Well, the truth
is
that, I mean, of course, they beat the model of the, you know, typical American because, of course, they're in their teens. And, of course, they're going to be a little healthier than the 30-year-olds like us. Sorry, Sean.
Okay, somebody needs to hook a pulse monitor up to the Dance Dance Revolution
and feed
back into the music.
That's actually what I was going to ask you is what would be the right workout for someone in their, you know, teens? How much time should they have a high pulse rate, and what kind of pulse rate should they have?
220 minus your age, 80% of that for 20 minutes.
220 for 20 minutes minus your age.
220 minus your age times 85%.
Okay.
Hey, if we made it easy, anybody could do
it. That's right. Then who would pay you for the consultation?
So it's not just double your resting heart rate?
No.
That would be bad. Okay.
No.
Okay.
But
so
you know, also these gamers like to eat chips and junk food too, right?
Doesn't everybody?
So maybe Okay, carrots and hummus might be better.
I'll do a little research for this. We'll get Wii Fit at the office, and I'll plug in some college students and see how they do.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Don, for visiting us. Dr. Don, of course, has the show Ask Dr. Don right before Geek Speak on KOSP, and you can, of course, subscribe to her podcast and our podcast at kosp.org. Let's start with the geek news. Sean?
I'm just trying to picture you getting college students motivated to exercise.
No, actually, the tennis game in there is very popular, and they're standing up and they're swinging virtually, you know, rackets
right,
around.
But is that really raising the heart rate?
Well, okay, so half of it is not looking like an idiot, right? And these college students don't mind looking like an idiot because you look like an idiot. You know, I mean, you've got this white thing in your hand, this remote control, and you're swinging your arm back and forth. Without the screen,
oh, darn,
it's pretty silly.
This actually reminds me of a question for Don that I've completely forgotten about.
Don, would you mind? Sorry, I know you've got to
go through, I've always wondered for all these like scary movies or suspenseful games or stuff like that, if your heart rate is elevated for an extended period of time but you're not moving, what effect does that have on the body? Is that good for cardiovascular or bad because it's a stress inducer?
Well, let's start with cardiovascular. If you're not exerting yourself, then you're not increasing your VIO2, so you're not really asking for more oxygen, so you're not helping your aerobic conditioning. On the other hand, when you speed up your heart does get some exercise, and we do that actually clinically for people who have a bad hip or an arthritic knee and can't exercise. We'll give them an injection that will speed up their heart so that we can measure how well their heart handles the stress. So it does have some benefit as far as exercising the heart is concerned.
So playing a game where zombies are chasing after you might actually be a good thing.
As long as you're losing.
Thanks, Don. All right, geek news. Miles, you got something? Sean, either of you, please.
I found this story about the VHS era winding down. One of the last distributors of VHS tapes out of Palm Harbor, Florida. Mm-hmm. He shipped his last shipment in October, and he stated that VHS is dead. This is it. This is the last Christmas, without a doubt.
So no more VHS tapes.
That's what it sounds like.
That's the thing, though. I'm kind of thinking this guy just didn't get the memo for the last few years. So
it's just amazing, but people still, you know, if you go to, in any of these used places, Rasputin's Music,
yeah.
You know, they still have VHS tapes on the back wall, and they're like a buck a piece, you know.
Okay, will there be a resurgence in a few years where people will get, like, tube amps with their VHS?
Right.
And, you know,
yeah,
actually, there are folks that
like
sell
vinyl, you know.
Yeah,
because those record players are on the rise right now.
But they're making vinyl as opposed to, there are some shops where you can find 8-track tapes in the back or garage
they're
sales.
They're not making those, though.
But, yeah, they're not going anywhere.
You know, for a short period of time, VHS tapes, you could actually modify the VCR and actually buy equipment that would just do really high-quality audio on VHS, and it was actually a very good audio recording medium. But in any case, it sounds like it's totally dead. Is this a guy who manufactures VHS, the actual form factor, or is he making movies, or what's he doing with VHS?
So I guess
what he's doing is not doing it anymore.
This guy's the president and co-owner of Distribution Video Audio Incorporated. They pull in an annual revenue of $20 million. Nickel and dime type stuff, and it sounds like they distribute tapes.
Right. So some company says, "Hey, I need a thousand of these."
If he's not going to be distributing them anymore, I'm sure he can safely say that if he's the only guy giving, you know, supplying these things, and he stops.
Well, for distribution of copyrighted material, as opposed to buying a VHS tape at Target,
right,
to go into your VCR to, you know, record a show.
All right. Well,
back when recording shows was considered legal and ethical.
It still is. You just have to have a TiVo. Let's go on to the next news story. Thanks, Sean. Miles?
Don't have to have a TiVo.
Australia is looking to block BitTorrent and actually filter the internet in general for traffic going to and from Australia. This is in an effort to stop copyright violations through file sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people not happy about it.
You'd think.
Right. So this would be the largest democracy that would be actively filtering the internet, what their citizens are doing. So that has some political repercussions.
It seems to me that it makes sense that Australia would think that way, in that they're physically isolated. Like maybe there's a subconscious of the society that goes, we can always cut off ties from the bad influences.
Well, it's not just them to the outside world. It's also within the
locally,
networks themselves.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, is that it's like it's a local thing.
Yeah, basically trying to cut off Australians from using the BitTorrent protocol.
That's a bad. Don't stop technology to try to protect copyright. It doesn't work.
Right. They actually have an officer in government that goes by the title of censorship minister.
Nice.
So the censorship minister was saying that they were going to try a run a trial to see whether or not the thing would work, and they were going to do it for a couple of days. And so people have been asking, how do you reconfigure a national network in 3 days, even to do the trial?
The law didn't happen, and then it started, did it?
It's not about a law. This isn't a law. This is an act of a government official.
This is horrible.
So
censorship
this is not,
minister. Oh.
Hasn't he
seen
80,
so Orwellian.
I know.
1984.
Darn it.
Oh, I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's 1984. I know it well. My sister introduced me to that, and I will forever be grateful.
It's funny that I'm sitting in between you and your sister right now.
You know,
Nicole's in the air room, and...
You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that, Sean, because I can't see Nicole behind the monitor. And hi.
You'd rather see her than us.
Well, of course. No, but specifically when I was doing the introductions, I'm like introducing and Don standing up behind a mic and stuff, and I'm like, there's someone else I'm not interviewing. No, there's nobody else on the show today. Okay. And then all of a sudden she moved a second ago and I almost jumped, and it was right when we were talking about video games and stress and whether it's good for your heart. I'm like, oh, that's probably good for my heart. Anyway, next news story, I guess. Yes, Sean, please.
Yeah, I saw this story about the classic radio flyer wagon. You know, the red wagon that, you know, either we or we're grew
yeah,
up with
radio
or,
flyer.
You know,
yeah.
I know my kids are growing
now,
up.
Now, do you have one that has the side panels or not?
I do, yeah.
See, I had one when I was growing up. We had one, but it didn't have the side panels.
I didn't have one growing up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had one, yeah. I don't know, 10 or something like that. But
Sean,
the side panels were off, and I didn't know that there were side panels for it.
Yeah, the wooden side panels.
Yeah.
My friends had one, so I...
Anyway,
Sean, you
the...
still sound bitter.
Yeah.
I didn't have
you know what? I don't. You know, I shouldn't because... I lived in the Midwest for a period of time, and there was a lot of snow, and I had sleds, lots of sleds. I'd rather have a sled than a radio flyer. Anyway, they are upgrading their wagon to a new version called the Cloud 9. It's equipped with a lot of crazy high-tech stuff, and I thought you guys would find this interesting. So they come with 5-point safety harnesses now, padded seats, cup holders, foot brakes. I don't know if I want my kid having a foot brake in the wagon I'm trying to pull.
What's the fun of this? If you can't get hurt, what's the fun of it?
It gets better. It's got fold-out storage containers. It's got a plug-in for your MP3 player, and it has speakers. The handle actually tracks temperature, time, distance, and speed, just in case you want to know how far you've pulled your kid.
I want to emulate Miles' expression of absolute horror.
Does it have Bluetooth integration so that they're complying with California's and free headset law?
Wait a second. Is this April 1st? This sounds fake.
This is real.
Wow.
They're calling it updated for the 2.0 world. It's called the Cloud 9. You wouldn't believe the pictures of it. It looks nothing like the wagon you grew up with.
I'm sorry. The 2.0 world, I'm a geek, and that appellation actually offends me.
It has chairs and seatbelts.
Yeah, it's got two chairs facing each other with a 5-point seatbelt.
That's a car seat. I mean, that's a stroller.
And cup holders.
That's a stroller. Come on.
It looks like a stroller, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wait, seats that face each other?
Yeah.
So the kids can, push in the opposite direction?
Well, they supposedly they have foot
brakes.
Look,
show Miles the picture. You can't actually push in that. Your feet are locked down.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. We'll have the story up on our website.
You're right, Lyle. That's a stroller.
That's a stroller, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a stroller.
It seems like a stroller.
Next news story. Miles, go over.
OS 10, 10.5.6 was released recently, and it's been giving some people problems. One of those issues is the screen turns blank, and they get no input from it whatsoever. So they can't even fix the problem without plugging in an external monitor, keyboard, and mouse. This is due to some driver issues, especially with some older machines. So if you have a newer machine, chances are you're going to be okay. But if you have a machine that was purchased a year or more ago, you may have some issues. So a lot of people are saying just hold off on the OS 10 10.5.6 update. So when software update comes up, uncheck that. You know, don't do it. And
how long do we wait?
Until another update comes out that people don't complain about there being a problem. This is another good reason why.
People complain about these things, right? I mean, there's always.
It wasn't quite like this, though. This is something where the screen turns blank, and if you don't happen to have an external monitor, which a lot of people don't, a lot of people don't have spare computer parts lying around that they're going to be stuck.
So this is just for. Is this just for laptops or for desktops? For
everybody? No, this is for everyone.
Okay, here, just to repeat the concern. If you have Macintosh with Leopard on it, don't do the most recent system update. So don't follow the rules that you normally should. With Apple, where it auto-updates your machine, decide not to uncheck it, make sure it doesn't happen, and then if you're concerned about it, listen again next week, and Miles will have an update. And if you're not concerned, you know, if you want to figure it out yourself, you can go to Apple and find out discussion stuff. All right, thanks, Miles, for that kind of sad news. I was about to do the update, so I decided not to do it right before the show because it's always a bad thing to do, since I can't actually do the show without
right. That would be actually interesting. You're saying, yeah, my screen is actually blank. I can't do anything right now.
Right now, so. I can't see any. I don't know what's going on in the chat.
That'd be horrible.
I'd have to say, Sean, next news story.
Oh, you want me to do that?
Yeah,
I was into the story. I wanted to hear what happened next. And then Sean didn't know what to do. Actually, notebook sales, desktop sales figures for the third quarter of 2008 have been released, and interesting data. 38.6 million units, notebook units, were sold compared to 38.5 million desktop units. So this is the first time in history that notebook sales have outpaced desktop sales.
Wow.
In fact, notebook sales are up 40% compared with the same period in 2007.
I wonder if that's price reduction or people are just feel like they're... Oh, you know what it is? Housing market. Everybody had to move out of their homes. They lost their homes. They wanted
laptops. That's horrible.
Yeah.
That's not it.
I think notebooks are just finally good enough.
Yeah, they're fast enough. Because things are shrinking down. Finally, it shrunk down to the point where you could take it with you.
Yeah.
You know the problem I have with notebooks? They're disposable in the sense that you cannot do the kind of upgrades you can do with a desktop machine.
On the contrary, you have a ton of USB ports. And you have a connectivity that was not even an option 15 years ago.
Have either of you ever swapped out a processor on a notebook?
Yeah.
You have? Was it easy?
Well, I didn't, but
right.
I watched Sean Pelletier, a guy I work with, do it all the time.
With and, a heat gun and equipment.
It's not easy. There's a lot of cursing. know, the problem is,
but
is
then
that
again, I almost always get a new motherboard when I get a
processor. Yeah, I was about to say, you always get a new motherboard along with, in fact, for that matter, you get a new
even
motherboard.
Harder to replace a motherboard and a laptop.
Well, a motherboard, yeah, that's true.
But the main board is still possible.
It's possible,
even though
yeah.
it's more expensive.
The
problem with the notebook, well, I guess maybe CPU is tougher because the heat pipes and cooling technologies in notebooks are really highly over-designed. I mean, they are crazy intricate. And a lot of small screws to remove that heat pipe assembly, and it's all tucked into a notebook. I don't even think so the components inside of a notebook are secondary to the actual design of the notebook. I know this is true at Sony. So Sony engineers, and probably Apple too, they design their form factor, and then they hand it to engineering, and they say, make it fit. You know, because people want a really nice looking notebook.
And they do that every rev of the notebook, which means the new motherboard's not going to fit the old case. So it's just the case becomes as disposable, dispendable as the processor and the motherboard.
Although I do have to say, although many times I would keep the same case, even when I was upgrading a desktop machine, a lot of times I'd get a new case or I'd have a new motherboard, new hard drive that was bigger.
The truth is, being a highly adaptable geek means you're getting rid of a lot of technology all the time or helping your friends and family with your old computer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's part of the burden.
And for that matter, with laptops, they would absolutely have been a lot faster if Windows hadn't required antivirus software chugging away at the hard drive.
And you know, I got to say, one thing about a laptop, which is really quite nice, is when you do help a friend or family with a laptop, they can bring it to you. They can, you know, it's not as have to go into the small den that is cluttered. And
that is true.
You know, I've been using this Toshiba Tekra for 3 years.
You have been using that a long time.
And it's held up.
It's held up better than Miles' Mac, laptop.
Yeah.
It certainly has.
You know, what's interesting is netbooks are on the rise. You guys know about netbooks, right?
Because they're cheap, and if you just want internet access to email.
Yeah.
Yeah, Asus started the whole thing with the EPC, but they called it an ultra-portable. But that design now is called a netbook. And, wow, talk about a technology that is really taking off. In fact... they expect that next year, I think it's going to be, brokerage UBS estimates netbooks will account for 8% of worldwide PC market next year. And iSupply sees it jumping to 12% by 2012. So these little things are they're in your hand. They have really small keyboards. My biggest problem.
Yeah.
And the screen, the vertical resolution is just a little too narrow for me.
Yeah.
Especially for some dialog boxes, the buttons just kind of disappear off the bottom of the mm-hmm. screen. But just for surfing the web or doing email for $300.
You know,
these things are incredible.
See, that's very comfortable with my iPhone. I don't do a lot of typing on it, but I do a lot of reading of text, of news, and of my email.
But if you're on a budget and you absolutely need a computer, you might want to look at a netbook. You'd be really surprised how much you can do on one of those.
Which actually reminds me, if you may want to look at a netbook, but you may want to wait another 6 months because of the Ion technology from NVIDIA that I've been reading about, and I happened to see one of those boxes when Sean brought it
over.
Okay, really cool.
When you wait 6 months, at that point, then they'll be on the market, and then they'll be too expensive, so then you want to wait another 6 months.
On the contrary, we're looking at a similar price point, right? Not tremendously more. That's what the reports that I've been reading. Not necessarily. Sean is not my leak. I'm talking about like what I'm seeing out there. And
I don't know what the market...
It's so much faster. Like everyone who's taking a look at it is going, oh my god,
faster,
this is so much faster.
The thing with these machines is that's not what you're buying it for. If it starts filling in the role of being able to run Word and stuff really well, then I can start seeing it as like a front.
Oh, well, that's
machine.
Based on the CPU, and that's the Atom CPU from Intel. And yeah, it's
a strong processor.
It's a strong processor, it is.
Yeah. Right, but I'm talking about being able to look at HD content.
Right.
If you're on a plane and watching HD
the
content,
thing that, I find,
that ability.
Well, except the screen's not big enough for HD content.
Sure it is. People have portable DVD players that have the exact same size screen.
Right, okay,
use it
so
all
these
the
screens, the one thing about these netbooks that are quite nice to me, besides, is that you can give a large monitor. You can plug into a large monitor. We both use our iPhones all the time to do this kind of reading and stuff, but you can't connect a keyboard to it and you can't connect a monitor to it.
Well, you,
and
with these you things, can connect you a monitor to it. You've done it before. You have the adapter.
But it's a TV monitor. You can't do any emails or anything. With that notification, you can only watch QuickTime content.
Oh, really?
So it's not useful for doing anything else.
Oh, I think you're going to see netbooks next year with HDMI.
Right. HDMI connector. It has a smaller screen, but you can connect up a 30-inch screen.
You can pass video and audio through it.
Yeah.
You can do, 7.1 audio through that connector.
But you would need the horsepower for driving that HD video, and you're not going to get that with the Intel embedded graphics.
There's truth to that.
I'm just saying.
This
like
is Central,
6 months might be a good idea.
This is Central Coast Public Radio KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam, and we are taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. We also are about to start talking about the kind of year in tech review, 2008, what we thought was hot, what we liked, what was important in the year, and chat a bit about that. So you don't need to call in. But if you feel like calling and asking us a tech question or participating in that discussion, 476-2800 is the phone number. Again, that's 476-2800, or toll-free anywhere in the, continent, 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Auto. I'm Lyle Troxell. We are taking your calls. Rick Philman's waiting, and you're welcome to call in. But let's go ahead and start doing some year in tech. One of the things that I thought was the big tech for the year, and we talked about this a bit, is Hulu.com, Hulu. Anybody use Hulu to watch TV?
Yeah, certainly. I use it.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, it's my primary source for watching television content now.
When I first heard about it, I rolled my eyes.
So what did you first hear?
These TV studios are starting a website so that they can cash in on their commercials that they're not selling, you know, on TV.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I just was not expecting a good experience.
A lot of people were criticizing and saying, Hulu, that sounds like Hawaiian for copyright infringement.
So
but they've had some backing from major networks.
That's the
networks.
Thing is they had major backing from, like, that's the reason why they succeeded.
Oh,
in
yeah,
some
it,
sense.
It was started by a major network, wasn't it?
NBC
or CBS, one of those?
It was a couple people that thought they could say, let's set up a YouTube of TV, which was the basic idea. And this is very much off the top of my head. So, and they went to a few major motion pictures, places, TVs, content holders, if you will, and said, let's do this. And those people bought in with a lot of money to get it started. But the first rule was we'll never restrict other people from joining. So there's never an idea that, the first company that to join was somehow better than the other companies. And that's why you saw, NBC, ABC, CBS, everybody's
NBC,
up there now.
Because they pulled their content from YouTube at the time.
Right.
And they've also been in major fights with the Apple iTunes Music Store. With regard to NBC videos, they've been going back and forth on that. So probably Hulu was used as a leveraging mechanism for
that. But what a great service. During the election time frame when Saturday Night Live was doing all those great skits, you know, I was going to Hulu to watch them. You know,
yeah.
And The Daily Show, they have that up there. One of my favorite shows is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That's a horrible, horrible show.
It's a horrible show. But
don't
I love
tell
it.
People, you love that I show.
I can't help it. But you can go there and watch it for free. Okay, so maybe not for free. It's going to cost you one commercial's worth of your time every, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing is they do commercials. And at first,
but it's not a lot. It's just one commercial.
I remember the commercial used to be really annoying in the sense that it was the exact same commercial for hour after hour or whatever. But now they've got a mix, and it's not bad. You can't skip them, and you can't save the content. And the shows expire, so there's a push to watch the most recent.
Right.
It's
not the highest definition. It's 360 lines. It's progressive, though, because screen is progressive.
Isn't there some 480 content?
You can actually click on 482 and get a little better resolution. But it's still not HD quality.
It's basically broadcast or DVD quality.
Yeah. It's DVD quality with the 480.
Pretty much DVD, with 480. Exactly.
Which is not bad for television, I mean, I think. Yeah. And the thing that's fascinating to me is that the model they're doing is very much like cable television, right? There's just all the shows are up there, but it's with the DVR kind of built in. So you basically can watch any content from any of the major networks for the last 2 months. And that's a lot of television to have whenever you want. And they've got queuing features for subscribing to certain certain shows.
But, I mean, this is the most credible push for the people who want standard television. I mean, the existing distributors of it to transition to the internet. It seems like the most credible transition point. I don't know necessarily how great it is. I personally don't like commercials all that much. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if I were a television producer, this would be the platform I would go for because it's the most familiar to me.
I was watching my wife and I have been watching a Daily Show and Colbert Report quite a bit, Comedy Central shows. And we've been watching for years. And for a while, I was bent touring them because I don't have cable television. I have DSL. So for a while, I was bit touring them, basically stealing them. And then I decided, you know what? I got to decide where I stand on this copyright issue and decide whether I'm going to be a person that does that or not. And I decided, no, I don't want to be doing that. And around the same time, Apple started releasing them for $14 for a month of them or something like that. So
and they're free from thedailyshow.com.
Yeah, no, they weren't at the time. And actually, when you did it there, you couldn't get full episodes. But that was a short period of time that I bought them through iTunes and actually paid for them with no commercials, which was really quite nice. And then migrated over to watch them a little bit free there. And at the same time, another service came up. And then when Hulu hit, it's just a no-brainer.
Right.
Like, it is so simple to watch those two shows, which is basically the TV I watch.
The Daily Show I thought was a really good example in that when I watch The Daily Show on thedailyshow.com, they have commercials.
Yep.
It's free as long as you watch commercials.
Right.
And then you have the option of you go to the iTunes Music Store and then you can purchase them without commercials, so those advertising dollars are made up by you putting in your credit card number.
And really, is the commercial worth the $2 or whatever? You know, that's the that's the thought.
And I
agree with that model.
I love the fact that you have a choice because for some people, they're like, I don't want to have to deal with that. I have some disposable income. That's worth it to me.
Right.
And other folks that are cheap like me saying, I want to see The Daily Show, but I'm poor.
Right. Okay, so Hulu.com was one of my – and just generally internet-delivered TV. And if we're going to talk about video-type content, we might as well talk about HD and Blu-ray because it was a good – for the year wrap-up, Blu-ray finally won. Do you want to chat a bit about that or
– Yeah.
Well, Blu-ray kind of won.
At what cost, though? Blu-ray won for sure.
And first off, Blu-ray won not because – consumers chose one technology over another. It's because Sony bought off the studios that were holding, like basically threw a whole bunch of money at Warner Brothers and said,
and
switch over, please.
We were all expecting Blu-ray, the prices of players and media to really come down.
Right.
We expected they were going to have to pay more in the beginning so they can make their margins, their cost back, right? And they were supposed to drop it and everybody was supposed to adopt it and buy it. But the fact that HD DVD, you know, stuck in for so long and it really, I think, cut into that. And its stuff is still too expensive now. These movies are $30.
Too much.
You know, The Dark Knight, I think, really helped Blu-ray because they sold so many of those Blu-ray versions. That was really nice to see. I want to see it succeed because, you know, I've bought into the technology and I see the difference and I like it. But I'm just not willing to pay $30 for a movie.
Correct.
And I like the high-def contents just for the storage capability, the promise of having a disk that can hold 50 gigabytes.
The thing that's most exciting to me is the archiving and backup
solutions. Right, but at the same time, just the movie fast. Portions of it, it's some. That's where they're getting the major competition from, is that people can now download stuff from, you know, iTunes Music Store or Amazon or
something. Well, that's the question. Well, it's not really HD, though. It's highly compressed. If it were even HD, okay, let's put it this way. All HD content is compressed. Even on the movies that you buy on Blu-ray, they're compressed down to 50, you know, gigs. The stuff that you download from Apple is, what, 6 gigs? 4 gigs? That's way compressed.
But it's a question of whether or not you are a videophile. Whether or not you have a TV that can handle it, and whether or not
take a look at Apple's trailers that are HD on your TV. Yeah. That's the quality we're talking about. So, it's not as good as the straight Blu-ray disc, most likely, because they've got a lot of space there. They don't need to compress as much. But they do look good.
Yeah, they're certainly not bad.
And then I wouldn't...
But, you know, they look good on a Mac, let's be fair. A 1080p QuickTime trailer plays horrible on a PC.
Yeah.
But why would Apple want to, you know, optimize that platform for a PC?
Right. They want it to not be as cool. Yeah. It's not as good. Okay, so the reason why I brought up that in conjunction with Hulu is the idea that, Miles, you've been saying for a while, why do we care about large format discs for video or large format physical media for video when we're going to be doing internet video, and it's just a matter of time. So now, to me, in the beginning of the year, I'd laugh and go, no, it's just not – the internet's just not there. But the thing is, Hulu's been such a success that now there's an industry that goes, this is a real delivery mechanism, and let's figure out how to make this better. And we'll see a growth in that area, especially when everybody's upset and frustrated with
it. It goes a little bit beyond that for me, in that just this holiday season, I was letting my sister borrow all of my DVDs because there's no point. I've bought these DVDs. I've watched each of them 10 times. Mm-hmm. And so I have these discs lying around for a long time. Why not have the download? I watch it. I watch it a couple of times, and then it goes away.
Right.
Or I download it when I need it.
Well, there's also this idea
and it ends up still being cheaper.
There's also this idea from my life, like, what do I want to store and have copies of? Well, the things that are important to me are the stuff that I create, right? So the photos that I've made or recordings of my kids or GeekSpeak episodes, like those things, I feel responsible to keep them for a long period of time so that they're available to the world or my children or whatever. So, but with a TV show or a movie or something, I didn't produce that. I know that I can always go get that somewhere. I can always get it again. So owning it's not that important. Yeah. So that transient nature of information is a very interesting experience for me in this year I've experienced mostly with this idea of like Hulu, where the episodes expire, but at least I don't have to copy my machine. I don't have to manage all that content that's not really mine, so when they expire and I didn't see it beforehand, it's gone, and that's okay with me. Let's go on and take some calls because we're being a little
but 50
little
gig archival, that's interesting to me.
50 gig yes, exactly, storing that stuff so I can actually put most of my photos onto a couple discs
at the right speed.
So Leroy from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yo, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey, you guys, I got this HP laptop computer I got about 6 months ago, and I can't get wireless from this senior park I'm living in. I got without any problem into coffee shops. Had this problem at one of the coffee shops and took it to a place, and it hooked right up to their wireless, so I don't think it's a computer.
It may not be. Is it secured? Is it a secured wireless?
No, it's not. And it's not one of those things where you can just get their number, type it in, and then get it or not get it. He had to get the number from inside the computer. He had to go in and get the physical LAN number.
MAC
address, yeah.
Right.
Okay. It's a Vista. Anyway, so that helps. But anyway, so and he had to reconfigure this. He has his router. He had all the information on this one computer, and he had it died, and he had to put it in another computer, and now.
So you're talking about the person that manages the network at your wireless at your home.
Yeah,
mobile home park. I think I know what.
Yeah,
we've actually seen this happen in my house, because to get wireless access at my house, I have to get the MAC address off your computer. Miles was showing. I think it was your notebook, Miles. We couldn't get it to work, and it turned out that we had taken the MAC address from the physical LAN connection instead of the wireless MAC address. You have two MAC addresses in your notebook.
Okay.
Or at least two.
Yeah.
All right.
So you may have taken the wrong one.
Okay, good.
That would be my guess.
Yeah. Right.
Cool.
So that's probably what it is. And what you need to do is just sit with that person and, you know, make sure they're friendly with you, because they're going to have to do a couple steps with you. They have to try it again and then, you know, make sure. And also those MAC addresses are very long and they're not, you know, friendly, human-readable words. They're just numbers. So okay. I would just go through that process again, especially if other people are having the same success. That's about it. Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks.
Remember to be nice to geeks. Give them a plate of cookies in exchange for the extra
or a
time.
Wii Fit.
Or a Wii Fit.
Or a
or
Wii
both.
Fit. Hal Levine? I think Levine. Hal called last week and actually has emailed us a couple times. And the basic question is, how safe is it?
He's on line three.
He's on line three right now? Well, let's have him ask the question then. Hal, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hello, Hal. Welcome.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Last week, I've
read it, but go ahead.
Last week you were talking to somebody about using msconfig and getting into the startup menu, and I've been doing that for years, and I disable almost everything, and I'm not sure whether that's a good idea or not, but I've been doing it and getting away with it. And then you talked about the services, and I tried playing around with that. I guess my question is, what kind of advice can you give about what you need to leave running in startup and in services? And can you really get rid of almost everything? Or
Windows installer tech support team will actually have you try this if you're having problems with the .NET framework setup. So if you can go in and disable everything in your startup tab, and you can go in services, and if you click on the hide all Microsoft services, pretty much all those services there you don't need to run.
So what he's saying is that when you click on hide all Microsoft services, those are the ones that are built in.
Those are the ones you need.
Everything else is an add-on of some sort, and you can get rid of all of them. But the biggest fear here is that you disable something and then your machine doesn't work anymore. And there's a few ways to deal with that, but the best way to deal with it is not to do that. And that's why Sean's saying, you know, hide the Microsoft ones, because if you know, you keep those running. But even some of those Microsoft ones you can actually disable.
Yeah, you do a little research. I'm not going to recommend anything on this show.
It's a little dangerous.
Yeah, because I think one you could probably disable is a Microsoft chat. The instant message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't use that, then you can certainly disable it. So it's Microsoft Services. Is that what it is? Microsoft Services.
Microsoft Service. Yeah, but it's got a weird name that sounds like a service, but it's really, one of the things I would recommend, first off, before you do anything more, is go ahead and, you know, list the services you have got on, maybe do a screen capture or jot them down. Keep a little journal of what you do. Once you do turn things off, kind of note what you've turned off.
Couldn't you just do a restore?
Yeah, you can do a system restore. You save your state.
Yeah, but you don't really need these services to run Windows. So all that's going to happen is, okay, when you first install Windows, if you were to go in and look at the non-Microsoft services, there wouldn't be any.
Right.
So those services are things that you've installed since you installed Windows.
Or they came with your computer.
Google Desktop
would certainly be one of those things that were added after you installed Windows.
No, but I mean, would you want to keep that going? Because it doesn't work unless it updates itself.
No, it's not even about updating. That Google Desktop won't show up unless it's running, I'm assuming.
Uh-huh.
Well, but it's a plug into the browser.
I think that's a startup item, and it's just looking for updates to itself.
The Google Desktop application.
Is there a service for that?
Well, no, it's a startup item. You've got to start it for it to work.
Right, but we're talking about the service.
We're talking about services.
I think the service of that started a little bit, and I got burnt, but somehow I was able to recover.
What I wanted to say to you, Hal, is that when you want to keep a log, because at one point you're going to disable something, you're going to think everything's fine, and a few days later you're going to notice that you don't have something. And you go, why does that not happen? And it's going to be frustrating to start this road of trying to figure that out, when really you turned it off a couple days ago. You just didn't notice it didn't work for 2 days.
Right.
So that's why I want to suggest that you kind of keep track of what you do when, so that when you have a problem, you can kind of roll back or at least figure out what you did.
Okay, you know, I disable service.
A screenshot would be a good idea.
Screenshot would work, yeah.
And now let's see.
Well, the services don't go away.
Yeah, I could back that screenshot up onto a memory stick or something.
Well, that's a little.
The services and startup items don't go away when you deselect them.
Right.
They stay there. So if you need to go back in and re-enable something, you know, it's there. You just have to put the check mark back.
I think a log, a piece of paper with a log that says, on this date, I turned off some services, and just list what they are, then when your machine restarts, you have a problem, you've lost your wireless card, you know, all of a sudden wireless doesn't work, you know that you can look back and go, oh, it must have been one of these things. That's what I'm talking about. Not a whole screenshot, because your screenshot's not going to capture all the services because you scroll them. It's going to be too messy. And then you're going to have to, you can only look at that if your machine is functional. Just have a little log of what you do. And the other thing you can have in these is passwords and such, and keep it, you know, nice and blatant for people to find, but not exactly the best idea.
So I've only had a problem with like my virtual private network, my VPN when I connect to work. That's a service that runs in the background.
Yes.
I disabled that by accident once, and all of a sudden my VPN wasn't working anymore. So that's the kind of thing that you would look for. Okay. If you're running a virus scanner and you don't see it running anymore, that's something you can disable as a service and it won't run.
Yeah, you definitely want your virus protection running.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go ahead and we're going to take another call. Okay, thank you so much, Hal. Bye-bye. From Santa Cruz, Josh, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
My question is about the latest Internet Explorer update that was required to protect people from...
Right. We talked about it last week, as in everybody has to get this update. Uh-huh.
Okay. So I've done the update, and I just guess I want to understand more. One, I'm just perplexed and a little bit mind-boggled. I know that Internet Explorer, everybody loves to hate it, so there's probably people out there trying to hack it all the time, but how... real of a threat is it? Do you guys know people that have had their computers taken over?
Certainly. Oh yeah.
And is it from looking at specific websites where you'd really be at risk, or
it's a mix of problems?
Well,
actually, but
yes, gambling and porn websites are going to be your biggest risks if you're someone's browsing them. Online games tend to be a good vector.
Now, the other thing about these vectors is this idea that there's a whole bunch of websites out there, millions and millions of pages that have things that can exploit your machine. Basically, if you visit that page, you're hosed. If you have the wrong browser, right? Now, this idea and this problem has been so prolific that now there are actually plugins and services that basically rate websites to say, this site links to other sites that might be problematic, or this site is a problem. And those things actually, there's the Google...
So like the AVG software, or virus protection software?
No, this is more about searching. Yes, that does happen. But for example, there's a Google search page, which is like a labs place, which actually shows you ratings of sites before you click on them. So then there's a Firefox plugin, which is actually how I use it, that actually modifies search results to give you a rating. So the problem is that there are a lot of sites out there that do this. If you are being careful and you're only doing certain things, it's a lot safer for you, right? But then again, friend sends here's a photo album of my kids, and you click on it, and really the site's not very good. It's hard to know. And so once you visit the vector, you know, you get infected. And this is why there's so many zombie machines out there, because it's not that hard to do.
Right. So when you're saying how real of a threat it is, it's a real threat.
It's a real threat. Yeah.
Okay.
Would you
know if your machine was taken over or not necessarily?
No, you wouldn't know.
Well, you may. It depends. You may or may not.
Let me put it this way. Sometimes I go, I wonder if my machine's infected.
I had a friend's computer that I just cleaned off a couple of months ago, and the reason why it had caused a problem is he had so many, they were actually interfering with each other and then causing problems in the system. So by the time you notice it, it's
too late.
Yeah, you have. If you notice it on your system, chances are you've got about 20 of them on.
Right. Sean?
So if you're running your regular daily or weekly, you know, full hard drive scan from AVG, is that going to pick it up? Or
not always, no.
So Alex, one of the geeks, notes that spam can cause an exploit in IE when it's open through Outlook. That's always been a problem. MySpace and Facebook are used by hackers to entice people to click
networking,
on to click on a video, which can infect them. You know, so there's a lot of ways.
Is there something you can run on a regular basis to pick up these infections? Or
no.
AVG or other antivirus programs, they're like washing your hands after you know, test something. But even though that helps you, it doesn't prevent you from getting colds.
That's right. The systems,
it can help you.
The systems that infect machines are so complex that one of the things they do, and there's teams of people doing this, they look at the most recent updates of virus protection software and try to make something that doesn't get detected. And it's always a race. It's a hop frog game.
Yeah, I will not use Internet Explorer as my default browser because I don't ever want to have to click on a link and IE open up and then I'm vulnerable to something.
Right. So we use
so
Firefox.
I'll still
as the
use
first step.
IE, but when I click a link, I want it to open to Firefox.
Right. That's a perfect example. You use Internet Explorer when you need it, and you do that because Firefox stopped working. You grab that URL, you paste it in Internet Explorer, and you launch from there.
Right.
That's a very good point. So there you go. I know that's not exactly the answer you wanted. Good luck.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye bye. That was Josh from Santa Cruz. Let's go ahead and go to Pacific Grove. Gene has been on the show before. Welcome back, Gene. What's your question?
Good morning. I've got a question about the converter boxes in February for TV.
Well, I've got a news story. I'm prepared for that. So let's talk about that.
I live in Fiji where we lose power.
Yeah.
So my question is going to be a little different than you think.
Okay.
I have a backup battery TV with an antenna on it, but the converter box, I assume you would have to plug in.
Yes.
So therefore, my backup battery-operated antenna TV is going to be useless?
No. The converter box will actually, well, you'll have to get a power source for that thing. Most all these converter boxes and stuff run on a, what I call a wall wart, which is a small power external power supply. So one of these things is going to be a box with an external power supply, and that thing's normally going to be 9 volts, 12 volts, 5 volts, something like that. So what you're going to have to do is find a power source that's battery supplied for that device. I would buy a normal one and then go to some battery store or something and try to find a solution that is rechargeable. In fact, the TV might have the right source and you could steal from it, and it shouldn't take that much power. I haven't actually played with one of these digital converter boxes. What I want to say, though, is February 17th, this is what I was actually, I'm glad you called about, is the 2009, February 17th, is the digital conversion date, meaning that all broadcast TV should be digital at that point, which means if you've got an old TV that's an analog, little rabbit ears, they will not work without a converter box. And the government's had a $1.3 billion amount of money to give $40 coupons to people so that when you bought your digital converter box, it would basically be free. That was the idea behind it. And they are going to run out of that. They're going to run out of that money in January. So they're actually, it's being used. People need these things. So if you haven't gotten the coupon to get your converter box, I would do it now because it'll help, especially since you're going to have to spend more money on a battery backup solution or a battery running solution for it. So have you already got it?
The coupon would be from, go online to look for it? Or?
Yeah, there's a government website about requesting the coupon.
Yeah, I can find it.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you so much, Gene.
Thanks, bye.
Bye. Yeah, that's right. It's going to take more power, battery power, for people off-grid or people camping. It might actually, I should have mentioned, and you probably tuned back in now, Gene, you might want to just buy a digital TV, portable digital TV, because that might be cheaper than getting, or more less complicated than getting the whole solution. And of course, the other thing is if you've got a car around, a 12-volt battery does a pretty good job. You can convert that to any voltage you need because cars are so common. You get electrical.
You know, the adapter. Netherlands switched over in 2006.
How'd it go?
Finland in 2007. I don't know. Canada will be switching over on August 31st, 2011, and China is scheduled to switch over in 2015. So it'll be interesting to see how we go here. It's going to be, this will be the biggest switchover when the U.S. doesn't.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I would like to learn about Finland and the Netherlands and how that went.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call, and let's also prep up our technology list. We're going to close the show with a little bit of lists of stuff that was important in 2008. From Salinas, David, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I had a question about FTP server. I'm using the FileZilla server and client. And I just want to be able to access my files from over the internet on my home PC.
Okay.
I'm able to connect to it, but I'm having a problem. It's coming up with an error saying failed to retrieve directory listing. I'm out of solutions to try. I'm wondering.
Are you trying to connect? Have you tested it from within your same network, from the same machine?
Oh, actually, no. I'm sorry. What was the question?
So what I would do with this is I'd start up the – first off, I wouldn't use FTP. It's an unsecure protocol, and I don't recommend using it over the internet. Okay. Now, so what I would do is I'd set up my Windows machine with the FileZilla server running, and then I'd open up FileZilla, the client, on the same machine and try to connect to myself. The reason to do that is it gets rid of all these other issues. You could have a firewall block problem. You could have a router problem. Miles looking at me like, what am I – oh, I see. Okay, slow down. So that's what I would do is first test it on the local machine. Make sure it's working there. Have you tried that yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And then the second thing is this connection directory listing problem is most likely due, if everything's working with the ports and open and everything, what that's probably happening is that you're running this file service and you don't have permissions to read those files. That's not an uncommon thing for a service like this. But on a Windows machine, you're running it. You probably can. Does this client start up by itself, or do you run it on the machine, the server?
The client, I would have to start the client. The server starts on its own.
Ah, okay. So the service starts on its own on Windows. That means it's a service or it's running under some other user. And that user might not have permissions to read the files you're trying to read. What you want to do is go ahead and set the files, whatever directory it is that you're doing FTP from, say read all, make sure the permissions are set to everybody can read them. And that's probably under permissions, sharing permissions on Windows.
Yeah, select the folder.
Select the folder.
Yeah, that the files are in Windows Explorer. And then set permissions that way.
The other thing is make sure to set passive mode on your FTP server and on your client.
You might have to, you might have to enable sharing and then set permissions. Right. Mm-hmm. So right click on the folder, enable sharing, and then set permissions.
Okay.
And the other thing about it is that when the FTP opens up, it uses one port, and then as it connects, makes a connection, it's going to use another port, and that's a firewall issue that always seems to run.
Only in active mode, not in passive.
Right, and that's why we suggest using passive mode FTP. But then again, don't use FTP. It's not a secure protocol. Good luck. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, David. All right, 2008, fun year in tech. I mentioned Hulu. Anything else, Miles? What was good for you this year?
This past year or what I'm looking forward to?
No, past year. Next year is what we're looking forward to.
In the past year, I've loved my iPhone and the advances that have been made with it. And personally, I highly recommend people upgrade to the 2.2 firmware.
All right. Sean?
What are we talking about?
This year, 2008 year in tech, what was interesting to you?
Google Chrome I thought was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I liked Hulu. I thought Amazon Kindle was laughable. Oprah loves it, so it must be good, right? But I just can't believe people are buying these things to read. That's just me. Google's Android platform was interesting. I think it beat out the iPhone in some ways. So I can't wait to see what they do with their next version. I like the fact that it has a full keyboard.
Facebook overtook MySpace as a premier site.
Or as the most popular. Yeah.
Wikipedia is still one of the most impressive things society has created, in my mind.
The MacBook Air was kind of interesting. One USB port, a fixed battery, only wireless connectivity. But still, this new version looks really nice.
Definitely.
And netbooks, I think.
Let me do this real quick. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Broadcasting in HD radio on 88.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arto. And, of course, on the web at kosp.org. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Miles, you got 30 seconds.
I got 30 seconds?
Tech of the year, sure.
I've loved playing around with GlassFish on the server side, so Java Enterprise Edition application server. So that's been nice. And I've been really excited about the 3D technology Sean was showing me. Technically, that's something for the next year, but since I saw it in this year, I got to be all happy about it.
I'll do a show.
Next week, actually, I think we're going to talk about upcoming technologies.
And that's next week on GeekSpeak, 10 a.m. on KOSP. Thanks for listening.